from the twisted realm of science and the darkest pits of reason comes chilling tales of godlessness. Bear witness to the unfathomable terror that is the Good Atheist.
I'm gonna do my show on Friday. We've done this before, and it was a roaring, much better than your show success.
Yeah, wow. One out of sort of like 70 shows, and you nailed that one out of the park. Good for you. Yep. Must feel pretty good.
All right, I'll kick your ass again this Friday.
All right. You know, when I'm exhausted and down, you can kick me. I appreciate that. You're a good friend.
Oh, you're down?
No, I'm not down. I'm not. Okay. I'm down in sort of like the way that, you know, all the stress and that kind of stuff from doing what we do is sort of like piling on, just because we always run into these strange, what's what I'm looking for here? Roadblocks, I guess. I don't know if it'd be so much roadblocks as much landmines, but
I would classify it as Jesus kicking us in the balls.
Sending
us signs that we're ignoring.
Yeah, the good word is what we were supposed to be spreading, but we're spreading the bad word.
I would also say that we are failing at applying the lessons that we've learned from The Secret. I would also say that that's probably another reason that you're failing in your life.
I'm totally not positive enough.
Last but not least, I think that you should spend some time going through the newspaper, checking out your horoscope, and you know, even if you don't agree with your horoscope, then kind of sit around for a bit and think about which horoscope are you really, because sometimes you're astrologically orphaned, and you have to find your true astrological sign so you can finally figure out what's been missing in your life.
And I love how there are only 12 types of people. There are only 12. Mm. Why is there no horoscope for the murderer? You know what I mean? Mm. You will slay someone today because somebody is. I mean, there's a couple crazies out there that don't fit within that really predictable pattern. And really, in those 12 personality types, who's not all of those things?
Okay, but that's the whole thing is, yeah, you can just make anything fit into them. That's why they're so
awesome. They must be awesome to write, you know? Like, if you get paid money to basically say nothing, it's got to be pretty fucking sweet.
What upsets me, though, is how many people just... I mean, how many of my friends, how many of my female friends...
ask you your sign?
Ask me my sign, talk about their sign, bring it up. And it's like, I imagine if you really quiz them on it, they'd say, no, I really this
oh,
and that.
Oh, it's for
but
fun.
It's, and you know what? I guess it is. But at the same time, I'm just like, it's just stupid fun. It's just, I just really don't get it.
I think it would be better if they asked me what my favorite meal was or what my favorite movie. That would start a better discussion with me, usually. I always did really poorly, by the way, on the whole what is your sign thing during dates. And you know how many dates I went on. And it was just something
What was the percentage? How many times did it fucking come up?
I would say probably about half the time they would bring it up. And I mean, I went on over 100 dates. I would actually have to say it's probably close to about 130, I think, dates in all in my life. Mm-hmm. And, you know, over half of them were always asking about, you know, my sign, that kind of stuff. Most of the time I was able to kind of like steer the conversation away. But once in a while, I mean, you get stuck with that girl that really wants to know and really takes that shit seriously. And all of a sudden you're like, oh no, this is going to be an unpleasant 2 hours.
This is what you got to do. You're just going to be like, see ya.
Yeah, well, you know.
By then, the food is being ordered.
Yeah, but you know me. Like, as soon as they're sort of like they tell me about it, I know that the date will not end in sex, and I do know that the date will be frustrating because it's always my feeling that I'm going to just sort of take away this stupid belief. That's how I am, man. That's how I am. I can't help it. So what do you think the date's like?
I imagine it's quite terrible.
Yeah. It ends up being like an hour of me proselytizing to them about why they're wrong.
So are you saying that about half your dates were just awful, terrible?
They were only awful and terrible because I have just this weird need to talk about the things that I believe and to squash irrational and stupid belief. It's just
one woman at a time.
One woman at a time. Oh, but then I learned.
As a gimme, they turn into lesbians too.
I don't know if there's any sort of lesbian conversion ratio so far. Mm. I don't think I've seen any instances of this. But generally, I think it was one of those things where later on I realized I need to completely expunge this from any kind of conversation. That's when I started actually getting good at dating. Because, you know, if you bring in religion, usually it's going to be a mistake. Mm. It's going to be a gigantic mistake. And I mean, think about how rare it is to find someone who has the same types of conviction as you, which is first thing I'd like to just sort of bring around and mention, which is the fact that some of my listeners, I know this for a fact, they will listen to the show, but they can't get their significant others to listen because, say, some of them are really religious, and it's just one of those things where you're like, okay, well, you can listen to that all you want. We've already had the discussion, and we've just decided that's going to be like a little thing that we put onto the side, you know, mm-hmm. religious belief. Okay, well, we won't really talk about this. And this is like, I don't want to be a shit disturber in your own relationships here, but my question is, I don't know how you guys do it. Like, I really just don't know.
It's just not that big of a part for many people's lives. Even people who would listen to a radio show like this, you know, they get their frustrations out like this. We talk shit about religion. They go, haha, and they feel a bit better, and then they don't have to worry about it.
I think the issue is the fact that I think the whole thing about it is that most of the time it's a non-issue. But now when you introduced other elements, like let's say children, it will become an issue. You know, that's not something you can put on the side anymore really easily, because what they believe, what you're going to teach them, all of a sudden, like, that's where it really starts getting contentious.
You know what's beautiful is that, actually, this might not be true, but the way that you want to swing it when you're in a situation like that is you say, let the kids decide on their own, you know?
Trust me, the kids
never want to go to Sunday school. They never want to go to church. You win by sheer laziness.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's a victory, but you'll have to admit that the other person is going to eventually abandon this whole, let the kid decide what they want, because no one really believes in God, you know, sort of like purposefully when they're a child. I mean, it's the same way that you'll believe in Santa Claus and all of a sudden reject it. I mean,
I like your conception that these people go from basically saying, I don't want to listen to the good atheist with you, my partner, to I'm going to force my child into religion if they don't go into it on their own.
But I read about this stuff all the time. You know, I'll go on this one guy's blog and he'll be talking about how they were discussing, I think it had to do with my article where they were discussing the whole Superman Jesus thing, and his daughter of the blogger basically was saying like, oh, I like Superman better and that kind of stuff, and the mom snapped saying like, well, Superman isn't real, and you know, the daughter was crying and that kind of stuff, and the guy didn't know what to do. What are you supposed to do in there, like, at that situation? Because you know that the child is not wrong in what they said. The person that is wrong is the parent that chastised the child for confusing a fictional character with another fictional character. It's just like, no. Obviously, you're going to feel like this is just, you know, these kinds of things are going to keep building up. You think you can hide that shit? I don't know, man.
Yeah, I guess once again, I just live in too moderate a world where it's like, growing up, you just had to be like, I don't believe in no God, Dad, Mom. And they're like, oh, but they're just like, I don't know what to do. He'll come around. And that's as much as it'll go to.
Yeah, they can take that attitude when you live in a place where you're not, like, although they may believe, like, here's basically my point. I don't know how, like, what the threshold, how strong a person's religious belief is until it starts really being a problem. I think it starts really being a problem when you look at, you know, the afterlife. If you are in love with someone who thinks that you're going to go to hell because you don't believe, like, that's going to be a problem instantly. Then how are you supposed to really deal with that?
I don't know. I kind of look at it like, say you're riding the bus with someone, and they have to get off at one stop and you get off at the other. You're not like, well, they get off at that other stop, so it's so terrible to know that they're getting off there that I'm just...
Well, okay, but at the same time, if they were getting off a stop where they're going to be raped forever, and your stop is sort of like a super fun land where you're going to enjoy your time, but still know that they're being raped forever, you know, you might not really be that happy about, this whole bus stop thing.
You invited them along. You gave them an extra ticket. They could ride all the way to Sunshine Central. Instead, they got off at fucking Hell Square.
I guess for me, personally, I would just... I find the concept, the idea that I'm going to hell for not believing in Jesus, to be pretty much one of the most vile human ideas that have ever come that we've ever come across. It's like, believe in this dude or an eternity of hellfire. I'm like, whoa, man, whoa. Like, there's a lot of things that people have done that's been pretty shitty in the history of the human race, but eternal torture, I mean, that's the ultimate shitty. That's saying, like, forever and ever you're just getting your face boiled and bees are going up your ass and all kinds of just
horrible
horrible stuff all the time, forever and ever. And I mean, the other thing too is that, look, a majority of people on this earth do not believe in Jesus. That's the sheer reality. So you got to imagine hell's probably a pretty overcrowded place. I mean, if it did exist, what are all these people in heaven doing with their time? Like, do they not have friends or family members that they miss? I mean, like, there's got to be some pretty amazing people that are down hell. Carl Sagan's in hell, apparently. It's like, I want to talk to Carl Sagan. If I go to hell, am I going to be able to have a conversation, or are we too busy yelling and screaming in pain? Like, come on. That's not a nice thing, I think.
This is all inspired by the conversation you had on Twitter, right, with a particular person that I guess was just kind of perusing around looking for... Like, was this person someone following you?
No, it was someone that they were following, someone else, actually. Okay. So this person went on and said, oh, because I had basically said that my contention was that if you were to read the Bible, it is God that is evil and the man that is good, because God is making us do all the crazy evil shit, all right? It's like, we listen to him and we genocided the Canaanites. We killed even all their babies. We smashed them on rocks.
They were so evil, we had to kill their babies to protect ourselves.
Yeah, exactly. That really sounds like a hero's tale, doesn't it?
That is.
I killed the baby because it was just too evil.
Yep.
I smashed it against the rocks.
Oh, you know, there's a lot of people that take that tack to terrorism.
Okay, fine. Whatever.
But I'm not saying it as a justification. I'm just saying that's fucked up.
That is pretty fucked up. Yeah. Now, basically, so she comes on and she's like, well... I wish you all the luck in the world, but you're going to have to take it up with God. And I realized that the only reason that she wrote this to me is because, you know, part of her feels that it is her responsibility to tell me that my eternal soul is going to go to hell if I don't believe what she believes. And this for her is her telling herself that she's doing me a favor by telling me this. But at the same time, I turned around and said, listen, I appreciate you trying to do this, but your ideology, I deplore your ideology, ma'am. I deplore your God that would be so fucking cruel. Like, I deplore him. This is disgusting. And I think that you believing in this and promulgating this is also quite disgusting. I mean, I'm not going to beat around that bush. And then she came back and she says, well, it's not my law, it's God's. And you know what? That's what led me to write a bit of an article saying, like, what a cop-out that is. You know, like the whole I'm following orders, yeah. I don't want to do an ad hominem here, but there are plenty of examples of evil shit that happens because people are just fucking following orders. Well, it wasn't my rule. Yeah, but you're still a human being. You make moral choices yourself. You know, you're confronted with moral choices and you try to make the right ones every day. You don't all of a sudden, every time there's a moral question, you don't grab your goddamn Bible and say, well, what am I supposed to do about my teen daughter trying to date this one guy? Like, there's no thing dealing with that. You're just trying to say, well, okay, this is the right way to do it. I still want to support her, but I'm looking out for her best interest. Whatever. You're juggling this all the time. You are the moral arbiter, whether or not you realize it. To turn around and just suddenly say, well, the more vile and gross things about the Bible, it's not my law.
And it's
so
not
it's
like
fine.
And it's not like people can't basically make their own religious decisions for themselves. Like, say, Jimmy Carter, didn't he just...
He left the Southern Baptist group that he was affiliated with because he felt that they were too sexist. You know, he was just saying that they were using the Bible to basically promote their own views that women are, you know, subservient to men, that they're, you know, not, you know, that they should basically just shut the hell up and stay in the kitchen kind of a thing. And Jimmy Carter took offense to that. And I can appreciate that. But at the same time, Jimmy, they're not wrong in their interpretation. I'm like, the Bible is very clear about a woman's position. She is the... you know, reason apparently why we have original sin and all this other kind of stuff. She bleeds out of her vagina as a punishment.
It was the first story in the Bible. Second. Number one, God created the universe. Number two, don't trust bitches.
Chapter two, don't trust the bitches. It's like, that's how important it was, man. It was like the fucking second thing they said, don't trust women. So are we surprised that there's a certain contingent of highly religious individuals that kind of dislike women and find that they are vile snakes? I don't know. I'd have to say that yes. But Jimmy's an example of someone who's like, okay, well, he still believes in religion, but he abandons those elements that he suddenly feels are just, they're just too much. You know, like my conscience doesn't allow me to accept this. Well, you see, that's another example. This is a conscious awareness that he has independent of the Bible. Like, he's interpreted the parts that he wants. That's what we do all the time. We interpret reality to fit our personality. So Jimmy Carter has interpreted the Bible that fits Jimmy Carter's personality. What a surprise. A person who's a womanizing sexist bastard is going to sort of find whatever passages he can that will, you know, support that idea.
Yeah, and homophobic people will ignore...
We'll quote Leviticus 18:19.
But ignore Leviticus, the rest of it.
Yeah, they'll ignore the Leviticus that says that you're supposed to kill your family members if they don't believe in the same religion that you do, or that women aren't allowed to speak or go to temple when they have their menstruation.
Like, no woolens either. I'm not giving up my woolens.
And leaven and yeast. The man hates... raised bread. Apparently God hates fucking
raised
bread.
He's down with flatbread?
He's down with flatbread, man. And I gotta say, leavened bread is awesome. Like, it is just simply awesome. Same with pork products and shellfish. Like, shellfish, I mean, I love, you know, I love crab, I love fucking lobster, I love shrimp. Fuck you, God, I'm gonna eat that. I don't wanna go to hell for eating fucking lobster. That's what I'm saying here.
Yeah, pretty much the only thing I can agree with, he has some kind of like crawls on his belly or slithers. Like, I'm like, I'm down with that. Crawly, slithery things are like, good rule.
Don't eat the crawly, slithery things or avoid them?
Exactly.
Well, of course we're going to want to avoid that. I mean, everybody... Is there any place that sort of like has pet snakes, or like, other than just people that have no common sense? I mean, like, stay away from snakes. They're fucking dangerous. We've known this for a long time.
They will wrap your kid up and squeeze it dead before you can even peel it off.
Well, if one of them doesn't squeeze you to death, the other one is going to bite you and give you so much poison to kill 10 of you. It's like, they don't just give you a little bit of poison when they bite you. They'll give all of it. The whole load.
It's because they love you so much.
They want to make sure you're dead.
They're your pet, and they love you.
Yeah, they certainly love you. Okay, I wanted to talk about something a little bit different. It was on a suggestion from one of the commenters. Basically, actually, this person was religious and said, well, here's this video that you should listen. And, you know, if you listen to this video, you're going to change your mind. You're going to think that there is a God. Okay, so I can't resist that kind of temptation, right?
Yeah, I'm total, like, false advertising, mind you. But unless, of course, we're changing the name of the podcast.
No, well, unfortunately, you know, I did watch
honestly,
it, but I haven't changed it.
Let me tell you what. We would make a lot more money off of those religious people.
We really would. I mean, that's the whole conversation about patronage, was the realization that I had, that saying, like, fuck, this man, if I had started a religion or whatever, I'd be a millionaire right now. I would be a goddamn millionaire. Let's not beat around the bush. And meanwhile, we're living like paupers because we're just talking about atheism.
Here's a question. If we actually started a church and made a lot of money and then revealed that it was all basically a big lie, would we go to jail for fraud?
You know, that's a really good question.
Because if we're just, basically, it's a fake religion, we just trick a bunch of people, get it as big as
you
know, who knows? Maybe it's what Scientology was going to be all about, but then you know...
He turned around and said, it's all fraud, and everyone was like, shut the hell up.
L. Ron Hubbard was going to be like, ta-da, just kidding, but someone killed him before he could do that and took over.
He just died of a heart attack or something. You know what? Here's the thing. Even if you did that, I bet you, I don't know how much money, if you were the leader and you were to say that this religion is a sham, I made it up, they would still believe in it. They would turn around and say, well,
you're no
longer
Satan,
the leader, talking to him or whatever. You build it up, but you have no real control over it, you know, because again, people will read into it what they want to read into it. So if I tell you that there is a God and sort of bad people will go to hell, you're going to find instances in your own life where that's should be true, and therefore is true. You're like, well, that guy wronged me, so he's going to burn in hell forever. And I'm sure that there's lots of people that you would really, well, not lots, but there's a few people that you would probably wish that on. I mean, if somebody killed your family or somebody that you're close to, you'd probably wish that on them.
Do you think that this is a bit of a left-wing thing? Do you think the religion is kind of a diffusion of responsibility that actually kind of keeps us from killing each other more? To a degree, you know, just like that guy's going to burn in hell, so I don't have to go out and just cut him up, hack him to death with a machete or something.
I don't know. Look, it's not as though people who are religious don't kill other people. I mean, look at the prison population. It's overwhelmingly individuals that are religious. So it's not even something that's good enough to prevent you from murdering anyone. It's just, even when you have the incentive of hell that you can believe in, That's not even enough to get you to stop killing another human being, because somebody who wants to kill someone else, they're just going to do it. They're just going to fucking do it.
But that's the whole thing is, you know, they talk about there's no atheists in foxholes. I kind of have this reverse position that the majority of people, like, they have that surface belief, and even a lot of them, it'll be soaked deep into their brain. But for the most part, you're going to have a hard time finding people who literally believe in that when they die, they're going to hell. Or you would have a lot more people freaking the fuck out when they're dying because they know what's waiting for them. They know. But since they don't, it's just that service thing. I actually kind of...
Well, you know what? It's Daniel Dennett called it the belief in belief. That is, essentially, most of us think that religious belief is important, and therefore, that's why we believe in religion, and that's why a person will say, well, you know, I wouldn't want the world to be, you know, without God, because then who knows what would happen, and, you know, it's good to control people that need to be controlled and for other people to give them meaning. So they believe in belief. They're like, this is important. This is worthwhile. Now, this leads me into sort of like what the subject of that discussion is. It's one of those, Google had this, they invite authors sometimes to come over and talk about their books.
They're so awesome. Google is awesome.
It's hard not to like. I mean, the name of the book is The Reason for God. Now, I was thinking about reading this, so obviously I was like, well, let me listen to the lecture and see what his arguments are, his main arguments. Because most of the time, what's great about these lectures is that although a book will be like 250 pages, trust me when I say that most books probably should be, you know, sort of like only about 30 pages if they really were just laying out all of their arguments. Laying out the fundamentals, not trying to build the case, just laying the whole idea sort of forward. And that's what I feel that he's done in that lecture. And I wanted to kind of go and talk about some of the bigger points that he tries to use to basically prove why there is a God. Now, he doesn't prove in his discussion necessarily that there's a Christian God. Now, this guy in particular, his name is Tim Keller. He's actually a priest himself. He's a Christian priest or a minister. Anyways, so he doesn't really talk about Christianity at all. His whole focus is to say, well, is there a God and why is there one? And he basically says that there are three things that he wants to deal with. One is why the reasons for God are important and how the reasons for God work, like how are they logical and what of those logical arguments, what is God, basically? That's his third one. Now, he starts off by basically saying, he tries to dismiss, like his first thing is to dismiss this idea that being more educated means that you're not going to be as religious. He chooses to sort of like use the United States as an example of this, with saying, well, look, you know, in the United States, religiosity is on the increase. Or he'll also use Africa, of saying that there's been a 50% increase in the amount of religious people there. Now, do I need to tell you why that argument is weak?
Because Americans are getting dumber and Africa is being overrun by missionaries who are only going there because it's like, and helping because it's fresh meat for the fucking conversion.
Well, Tim doesn't really understand, like, because he views like a population's intelligence based on sort of like their technological advancement. But I'm like, just because you're technologically advanced doesn't mean your entire population is smart. Just means that some of them are, the ones that invented these things. But just because you live in an industrial society doesn't necessarily mean that you'll be literate. I mean, the literacy rate is not 100%. It's not. And even if you are literate, it doesn't necessarily mean that you are very educated.
Well, the problem is there's huge gaps in the educational system now where you can grow up and go through school and get pretty decent marks but still be a big, giant idiot about lots and lots of things. Tons of things, really.
Yeah, well, I thought at first that was kind of like probably the weakest argument because we know for sure that there is a direct correlation between education and religiosity. Doesn't mean, for instance, that if you are really highly educated, you won't be religious, but that is the trend. Like, there are very, very few individuals that are religious that are, you know, like when you get into higher education, particularly in the fields of science, like these individuals are not religious overwhelmingly. And these are some of the most educated people on the planet. So you do see that correlation. Yeah, like that correlation exists.
Once you get too high up on understanding kind of the galaxy and understanding even evolution, these are both rabbit holes that pretty much destroy a lot of people's abilities to believe in God.
Well, it's the same. It's the common reason why people that try to promote creationism want to destroy evolutionary science, because they know exactly what that leads to. You read the fundamentals of evolution, you realize that you are just like, you are an ape, okay? You are a naked African ape that shares a common ancestor with all the other great ape family, and all of a sudden you're like, oh, I wasn't created out of dust. I actually share, you know, many things in common. Most, what was it, like 96% of our genes are shared with chimpanzees. I mean, that's a lot.
Yeah, and we're pretty close to pigs too, apparently. So it just goes to show
Or even
you.
Mice. I mean, that's why we experiment on mice all the time, because it's, we're very similar to mice. Mice are tiny. Human beings, large. But we're not fundamentally that different. So that was his first argument. I thought that was pretty weak. So that was like, at first when I was listening to that, I'm like, Tim, come
on. That's
a
pretty weak opening. That's very weak opening. Very weak, because that's just a common sense one. Anybody that hears that is going to say, come on now. Even religious people will be like, meow.
Okay, now the other point that he brings up is he seems to believe that people reject God, you know, for reasons that sort of like aren't in, necessarily intellectual. So they
like,
reject
I
God
hate
because
God.
Yeah,
God
you know, you
screwed
get
me.
You get. You know, sort of like you get burned or something horrible happens to you, so you are going to reject God. And he says, he claims, now I agree to this to some degree. Now, he says that, for instance, yes, your background, or not your background, but your surroundings will influence to some degree what you believe in. So you're more likely to believe in the things of, you know, that people, of people that you're around, or that you want people to like you. So you'll believe in what they believe. But if that was true, then there would be no atheists in the United States, because most of the times, or even probably most of the listeners, they don't know that many people that around their surroundings that believe in what they do. Like the United States is still very overwhelmingly very religious.
Yep, and atheists definitely have it, have ourselves pegged down as being annoying individuals that no one likes.
No,
like we're in that stuffy kind of like name a group of people you dislike. Oh, lawyers, atheists.
Actually, I think that atheists might come before lawyers.
Prisoners,
terrorists. Yeah. Terrorists is probably big three, you know.
Yeah.
Atheists, lawyers, and terrorists is probably.
Well, you know, terrorists probably beat them all out, but that's just because they're what's hot. They're so 2000s. You know, communists from the '80s. Terrorists are the new communists.
Communists. But at least the sort of they don't pull the whole godless is the new enemy, you know, because your enemies, quote unquote, they're very religious. They're the opposite of the whole godless thing we used to have a fear of way back in the old days. And all of a sudden you're like, oh, no, it's the super religious that we should be afraid of.
Yeah, I'm happy that it switched back to that, because there was a point in time where, you know, we were just talking about communism. Communism's kind of, I'm glad they only gently fondled atheism and for the most part just went completely off the tracks, because if they'd held on to it a bit harder, it would have been a really hard sell, you know? We already hear that Stalin and Mao are atheists and look what they did, and
well,
all the atheists.
They used to say
policies.
All kinds of shit, though. They used to drive the Americans insane. Like when they sent a man in the cosmos, they were like, well, we sent someone up there and there was no God, you know? It's like that's rubbing it in their face. I kind of missed that. And at the same time, the problem was really more that Russia was a fucked up place. It's just a fucked up place. So, you know, it was not the kind of government that you want to be overwhelmingly atheist.
Well,
it's not going to give you a good, you know, track record. So we don't have a good track record, unfortunately. I'll be honest.
Yeah.
I'll be the first to admit that. Now, okay, here's the things that I do want to say that he is fair about. Number one, he's fair in saying, for instance, that atheism doesn't necessarily lead to moral decay. So he's saying, well, you know, religion is responsible for crimes, which he does not deny. But he'll say, okay, well, lack of belief, you know, regimes that had lack of belief were just as guilty as regimes that had belief.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I've always said to some degree that's kind of something that we need to deal with. We can wash away the idea that, you know, for that Mao or Stalin or atheists and that kind of stuff. And we know that they didn't do this based on atheism, because there's not like the big book of atheism that says destroy all religion. This is not a fucking rule. Atheism is basically there is no God. That's it. That's fucking rule one and the last rule. So whatever the hell you decide to do with that, if you become a nihilist, for instance, that decides, well, no one should fucking live because there is no God, and brah, like, that's its own rule book. That's an ideology unto itself. Like, the only thing that you share in common is the fact that you don't believe there is a God. But atheism is just a position on a cosmological kind of, like, fucking reality. Is there a God or no God? Atheism's like, it's no God, dude. And apart from that, it's not really much else. All right, I'm not going to start saying that there isn't perhaps some that might be tempted with nihilism if they believe there is no God. I mean, we've seen those kinds of guys all the time. We know people that are like that. You know, all of a sudden they're like, "Fuck God and fuck everyone," and bleh. But I don't think that that's representative of most people who reject God. They're just like you and me. They're just saying, there's no evidence, and why you got to be all in my face and my grill?
Yeah, it's like, why are we not moving forward with civilization and amazingness and getting together and dealing with this world, because we're so preoccupied with all of this bullshit?
It's a lot of bullshit. Now, here's another thing that he talks about, which is his probably one of his weakest arguments. And basically, he says that it takes as much faith not to believe in God as it does to believe in God. In fact, he says that it takes more faith not to believe in God. And some of the way that he kind of goes about this, the first thing that he mentions is saying, well, at the end of the day, you can't know anything. Like, there is no certainty or absoluteness about any of the knowledge that you've accumulated. Therefore, you know, what we accept on a certain relative amount of faith. So you can't really know that, you know, that gravity exists. You can't prove it. You can't prove that there are all kinds of things. I mean, it's
a pretty huge cop-out.
It is a cop-out, because I'm like, look, if you say that we can't know anything, then why the fuck am I listening to you about your views on God? Like, you're not even... You've just invalidated all forms of arguments. You just said, basically, we can't know nothing. Okay, well, that's the end of the discussion for you, sir. You can't turn around and say, well, because of that, listen to me now. You just can't.
Because I know things.
It has been revealed to me the following, blah, blah, blah.
Mm.
Okay, but beyond that, I think it's also sort of this idea that he thinks that accepting sort of the notion that the earth revolves around the sun is a type of faith. I've dealt with this before, that it's not so much faith, because I think that we generally misunderstand what faith is. It's a type of trust. You know, I trust that the earth revolves around the sun, and there's lots of evidence to suggest that that's what happens. I mean, there's the fact that we have, you know, seasons, the fact that we have... you know, day and nights, the fact that there is no other alternative explanation that sort of really makes any sense, basically.
You could basically prove it just by sitting out on your lawn and using a shitty little telescope to look into space. You will notice that, hey, as we circle around the sun, you're able to track stars as they move past in such a way that would prove that you're... Or that would suggest, again, you can't prove anything, but it's like, it's there. Like,
it would be considered, like, here's what I think his problem is. And this is, again, the problem of most religious individuals, is that your standards of evidence are fucking different from ours. Our standards of evidence is basically this. Okay, well, you have this idea. You have this hypothesis. Now you need to sort of, like, find and observe... and create a model that can make predictions, right? These become theories as they become refined and fine-tuned over time, and that's how we've accumulated knowledge. And this is a relatively new development in sort of like human understanding. It's really quite new, but it's fucking amazing. It's really amazing, and it allows us to do all kinds of really great things. Now, on the other side, the standards of evidence of people that are religious is... I have this book, and it is infallible. It's the word of God. And how do I know this? Because that's what the book says. This is not a good standard of evidence here. Now, if you turn around and say, well, everything that discounts what I say, you need to ignore, I'm like, okay, come on. Now it's done. You're done, all right? We were having an adult conversation, and you just walked in saying... Well, you can't disprove what I say.
But fortunately enough, he's not going back to the book, is he? Like you were saying, he doesn't really touch. He's more talking about that whole nebulous, there could be something out there. And it's...
Well, this leads him to the point of basically trying to bring on the ontological argument. Do you remember that? That's the whole argument for God's fine-tuning of the universe. The universe is so well-suited for life and for us that it must have been designed for us. Which is the weakest argument. It's like saying that your nose was designed for you to put glasses on them. You know what I mean? Like, you're inferring a lot from that.
But that's the whole thing. It wasn't designed for us at all. There were how many millions of years of us dying horrible deaths before we got to a point where we were able to thrive past being sludge?
Well, dude, man, you want to talk near disasters? I was reading this in Cracked.com, which I enjoy Cracked because they always take real stuff like science and quirky things, and they'll make amusing articles.
Yeah, it's not like Maxim magazine where you just have to stuff a bunch of fucking marshmallows up your ass to get in there.
No, Cracked. I like their shtick, and one of their shtick that they were saying is that here's all the ways that human beings have almost been annihilated, and you know, you just he mentions asteroids falling. There's this, I think 75,000 years ago, there was a huge volcanic explosion that's like thousands of times more powerful than the largest bomb ever deployed. And it basically apparently reduced the population of the Earth down to either 10 or 5,000. And this is sort of like one of the common explanations as to why all of these other pseudo-human races disappeared and why we all share so much genetically in common. It's because we're almost wiped out. You know, we almost had as many humans as listened to this show. That's how few humans there were.
Wow.
It's like back 75,000 years ago. And although I'm going to tell you, it's not a theory that's 100% accepted. There's a good deal of evidence to suggest that this is true. That volcano did explode. We do know that. And we do know that around that time, lots of other different types of hominid species disappeared. So, you know, there's a strong corollary there. But it's a frightening idea that we would just always come close to being annihilated. I mean, we have all kinds of flus and epidemics that just sort of kick our ass all the time. And just, I mean, it is generally very lucky that we are still around. So we could feel pretty, you know, special saying, of course we were meant to be here. But
we fit in like a glove.
It's like, wow, what a loving God that I'm alive. And you're saying, you know what? Just the universe. Just go out there in the universe. It is basically, it is anathema to life. It is not, it's not a place where you want to be for the most part. Cosmic rays blasting everything. Fucking entire galaxies exploding. You think that you can support life when a galaxy that you're in explodes? I mean, quasars are some serious business, sir. Serious business. We're just lucky that we just don't have to put up with that shit. I mean, even at the center of our own galaxies are supermassive black holes. Supermassive black holes have just become dormant because they were done eating everything. But these are still, you know, not very good things for life to be around. It does not take much to wipe us out. Fuck, a cold can kill you. You know, a bad cold. That's how fucking fragile you are. The universe, no. It's not designed. If everything had soft, round edges and pillow-like softness, I might think that this universe was designed for us. You know, if everything was made out of candy.
So tell me this. Was it before God created black holes or after that he started saying that he wanted to hear everybody's sins individually so he could forgive them in Christianity, in Catholicism or whatever?
Catholicism? I don't know. I don't know what their whole... I don't know what the point comes where you're just like, okay, well, science stopped and here comes Jesus. You know what I mean? Like, because Jesus is a science stopper. You know? Just read Revelations. There's no future for mankind. There is no future. The future is going to fucking heaven.
There was no mention of leaving the planet and going anywhere else.
Into space? No.
Nothing cool, really. They didn't even really think up...
They didn't even talk about colonizing the moon. You know what I mean? Very regional book.
No
Very
Game
regional.
Boy, no television. It's like, man...
It's so depressing.
Nostradamus fail.
No Game Boy?
No, they didn't. Well, they didn't get anything. They didn't get anything. Nothing in there. No futuristic anything gotten right at all.
That's lame. Now, yeah. here's another thing that I find would be quite funny, and this is an argument that I see all the time, and he makes the same argument. It's basically that he defines God in such a way that, of course, you can't disprove him, you know? He'll basically say that God exists outside of reality, that he does not need a maker. All of these rules that are basically, they are the... It's the ultimate answer, you know? It's that, well... if you say, well, if the universe required a creator to begin with, then the creator needed a creator, right? To which they will always respond, well, no, he's God. He doesn't need his own creator. You're just like, fuck off, man. You come here and you tell me that everything needs to have a creator. Then you say, well, no, it doesn't. My God doesn't. Well, maybe the universe doesn't. Like, this is just the first failure of your argument. You're like, well, all things need maker. Check. Okay, that's an assumption. Now, let's test that assumption. The maker of the universe, did he have a maker? No? Okay, well, that's a failure right here. That your statement is no longer true. Hmm. Not all things need causes. Which is actually something that we find is possibly true. Not all things may need causes. Right now, the best interpretation of sort of like the beginning of the universe is that it did not have a cause. You gotta get fucking accustomed to not all things have causes. You know, it's there or it's not there. Oh, well. And if you really want to understand, like, I don't know yet why. But I'm not going to tell you that you're going to burn in hell for not fucking believing what I believe. I really don't know why. I mean, science is trying to find those answers. We may never fucking know. We may never know.
And we could figure it out in like 25 years. Yeah, would be pretty think about what we figured out in the last 50.
It's a pretty serious hack.
And we've got even better Game Boys to figure it out on.
And think about this. We know things like how old the universe is. We know generally how many galaxies there are and how many stars are in these galaxies. We're doing this all from like this one tiny fucking blue planet. And we even know things like what stars are made of, you know? All you got to do is you can break apart the light that comes down. You will know exactly what elements are in it based on sort of like the refraction of photons off the electrons, of the valences of the atoms. In other words, it creates a shadow. That predictable shadow tells you what that element is inside the star. So you can know what a star, you know, fucking billions of years away is made up of. How fucking amazing is that? We're on a rock. Floating around is a very unremarkable stars, but we're able to make all these observations because of the things that we've discovered. Like
200 years ago, we were burning people to death. Well, I guess we are still burning.
We're still here, doing here that. Was, didn't like, you remember that video in Nigeria where they were burning those people? It's still happening.
Yeah, well, we're
still happening. But, okay, back to the whole creating a god that cannot be proven or disproven and therefore thinking that you've won the argument. You really have not won the argument. Now, look, we live our lives based on the observable, okay? There are things that we cannot observe, and I don't mean just things that we can look at. I mean things that we can sort of model and predict, and maybe there are sort of like, say, parallel universes that we couldn't even conceive of or imagine or even describe, and they are therefore not relevant to us. They're not real. They're not something that we should suddenly take a position on. Are there parallel universes? I don't know, but that's the whole thing. If we discover Then this is a new conversation that we're having. So if you're giving me an unimprovable idea and then suddenly saying that I'm a fool or I have faith for not believing in your improvable idea, like, what does that say about you? Like, his idea that it takes more faith to not believe in God is like saying that it takes more faith to not believe that there are fairies around, you know, because you can't disprove fairies. Therefore, you have more faith to not believe in fairies. Does that make any sense to you? It doesn't make any sense to me. It doesn't pass that fucking sniff test. You smell, you're like, something smells rotten about
this.
Well,
it's the whole flying spaghetti monster who I love dearly. It's basically... Wait,
it touches us with his noodly appendage?
It could. You can't say that he doesn't.
I think it's also funny that at one point Keller brings upon this idea that we are taking a risk by not believing in God. And this is the fucking part that always bugs me. Because now he is claiming again that he's trying to prove or disprove a God that is not necessarily the God of the fucking Bible. All right, I would actually rather that it was the God of the Jews, because if the God of the Jews does not send you to hell, okay? You're just not close to God when you die. You know, you will just be outside of God's protection. I'm cool with that. That's a live and let live policy. I'm like, you don't believe? That's fine. You're not going to go to the eternal place in the sky. I'm like, I don't even know if I want to live forever, dog.
Well, I mean, thinking about how wrong we've been about so many things over, like, the course of our entire, you know, human civilization... I just think it's pretty funny to think that we got it right and we know what the rules are.
Yeah, that we got it right thousands of years ago, too, when we got nothing right. We didn't get anything right, you know? Like
we sucked.
We really sucked.
We were dumb. And
I mean,
we were
look at what Egyptians were doing. Like, they were thinking, oh, it's all these other organs that are responsible for your emotions. And what's this weird thing in that head? Whatever, just clean it out. Mm-hmm. You know, you don't need to store it. They didn't even store the brain. They store the heart, the lungs, everything. Threw out the brain. They didn't think it had any value. Nice.
It's just a counterweight for your crotch.
Maybe they thought it was some sexual thing. I don't know. But I think it is intellectually unfair to say that you are just talking about the idea of God itself as sort of like an intangible thing and then sort of turn around saying, well, you're risking yourself by not believing in him. I'm like, that's a very specific claim of very few religions. Like, comparatively few punish you for not believing. Christianity, Islam are two of the very... you know, the big ones when it comes to punishment.
That's the funny thing. When you think about it, they're pretty bright. They're pretty over there as far as just...
Like on the other side in terms of sort of...
As far as religions that are the most... When you think about it, how they damn people and this and that, they're pretty much the most severe religions out there.
I think it's funny, too, that Tim actually thinks that morality or ethics... is not something that can develop in nature at all. He says, if you believe in human rights, you have to believe in God because nature is cruel and our morality could not have come from nature. And, you know, that's a pretty bold claim for a person who doesn't necessarily understand, you know, evolutionary biology or who isn't, you know, an anthropologist and stuff like that. Like, is there a natural... Like, the better question is, rather than making that statement saying there is no natural correlation, like... The better question is there a natural what's that word? Antecedent?
Anticipant?
No. God damn it. Is there sort of a moral... Is there another species, for instance, that is moral, that acts with its own ethics and code of ethics? Or is it everything for red tooth and claw? That's the first question, right? Mm-hmm. Is there a code of ethics in other species? Do you think there is?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, of course there are. I mean, we see that all the time. I mean, you can see it in bats, all right? Basically, vampire bats, which we would probably assume is scary, they communally share food with other bats. And in fact, they have their own system of dealing with ethics. So for instance, if you take one of those bats that's flying out, you catch it and you pump up its pouch with air. When it comes back and it basically can't feed any of them because you've tricked it.
Because the pouch is supposed to be full of food.
It's supposed to be full of blood and it's only full of air. What happens is in reaction, the other female bats won't feed her baby as a type of punishment. So it's like, that's reciprocity right there. If you don't feed our children, we won't feed yours. And this is a very, very standard tit-for-tat ethics that we see in nature all the time because a lot of species choose to cooperate. And they don't just, you know, it's not all the strong eating the weak kind of bullshit. That's just that whole, you know, this notion that people have of nature as being entirely cruel and red tooth and claw and the survival of the fittest. And you're just like, it's not that simple. It's not that basic. And you want to know what the greatest proof of that is? Us! Here is a natural species that has developed a strong code of ethics because of things like, you know, that we're empathic. We have our cerebral cortex, which is often sort of like been called our moral center. As it develops when we grow old, you know, when you're a child, you're a fucking little piece of shit, okay? You're selfish, you are violent, impulsive. But as time goes on and your cerebral cortex develops, you become more ethical. You become more, you have more empathy. So where does that come from? It doesn't come from the Bible, sir. It comes from the development of your brain, of that sort of moral organ that you've developed.
Wait
over
a second.
Time.
Don't monkeys have brains too?
They do. And they actually have sort of like the, you know, their own, sort of, I don't want to say code of ethics, but let's use this common example that you see in nature where, one monkey decides that he's going to sort of piss off like one of the larger males. And this happens. I mean, they're bored. They don't want to play around. So they go over and they piss off the big guy and they get beaten up. And everybody else sort of recognize that he fucking deserved it. And they don't do shit. But if one of the monkeys, one of the larger ones, is in a fucking bad mood and goes over and beats the shit out of just some poor monkey, then all the other monkeys will sort of like go to him and comfort him and stuff like that and shame the larger monkey for having done this. This is a very clear code of ethics. I'm like, we would do the same thing. If a person goes over and they deserve to get smacked in the face, we're like, good. You fucking deserve that, you dummy. But if it's fucking uncalled for, you have a reaction to it. And you're not even alone in that. Other species do it as well. So it's not as though you can suddenly say, well, ethics comes from God because it's not in nature. Sorry, Tim. It is in nature. You just either chose not to see it or you're not aware of it, which is a shame because you can obviously tell this guy's very intelligent. But, you know, like most people who choose to believe in something that is not fundamentally very smart, like the idea of God is not a smart idea. Like, I'm sorry. It's just, it's a very old idea. And you can develop all kinds of really impressive rules and theologies based on this one idea, but it's not in itself a very impressive one. It's kind of like the magic man done it. Kind of a sort of like idea. And we've had that idea for a long time. Very primitive, uneducated individuals have come up with God on their own. Like, education not required. Just sort of like, look out. You realize that your own life is dictated by people that are stronger than you. Ergo, nature is really strong. Ergo, nature is a fucking God. Nature wants to kick me or kill me or if I don't appease it, or sometimes it's good and I don't really understand it because it's all powerful. Very fucking basic idea. Mm. Very basic idea. There's a couple other things I wanted to talk about, which I thought were funny in regards to the whole morality thing. You're going to appreciate this. So basically he said that we cannot trust human beings to be moral because if sort of 51% of people decided that genocide was okay, then according to even our own democracy, that would be fine. This is sort of like one of the reasons he says we cannot trust human beings. Mm-hmm. With our own ethics and morality.
Well, because of the tyranny of the majority?
Well, I say that he used that as an argument, but I think more generally, he's just basically saying, well, you can't let individuals decide what is moral and what isn't moral because you know, we could suddenly switch over and decide that, you know, it's okay to kill people and it's okay to sort of like steal and that kind of stuff. How do you think that argument really boils down to? Or how do you think it fares?
I don't really understand the whole cause and effect of if there is no God, people could quite possibly vote to genocide people as opposed to if there is a God, they won't. I just don't get how that adds up.
I also don't even understand how these people think that laws are being made now. Did God decide the speed limit was 55 fucking miles an hour? The reason that we have that is we realize if people drive fast, it's more dangerous. So we have speed limits to protect people. But there's no part in, say, the Bible that says you need to create speed limits. We do that because we feel naturally inclined to want to protect individuals. And it isn't because of a law that or a rule from a sky god that decided that. It's us. And, like, the greatest proof that human beings can be moral is the fact that human beings are moral. We are proving all the time that, given the right circumstances, we are peaceful. We don't want to fight or kill other people. There are some that do, but God damn it, the overwhelming majority of people, they do not. And to suddenly think that everyone's going to switch around and say that genocide is okay, I dare you to find one person that's going to tell you that genocide is okay. And if you do find that person, you should call the police. You should call the police immediately. You're not going to find anybody that's going to think that. And it's just basically because we recognize that it is a really disgusting thing to do. Does that mean that everyone agrees to that? No, it doesn't. But it doesn't mean that that is contingent on believing in God. That would have meant that no one that believed in God would have ever performed genocide. Let's see. Does that hold up as a theory? Has any religious individual committed genocide based entirely for religious reason? Well, we could go back to the Old Testament and we find that, holy cow, that is true. That basically God encouraged genocide. He's like, you need to kill all these people except for the women that didn't lay with men. It's a clearer sign of genocide you cannot find. And this leads me to this other point that he seems to have, that I think he believes, like a lot of Christians out there believe, that basically the reason why we have human rights is because of Christianity. Like, this is what has made us peaceful as a society and as a civilization. They credit Christianity.
But Christianity's been around for a really long time, and we didn't have human rights for all that entire period.
No,
much.
We didn't. And if you look at it, actually, if you look at the track record, and this is what people try to say, they're not saying that religion is going to make you the more evil person. You just look at saying, well, in the history of mankind, how has religion fared when you compare sort of like to the modern ideas and ethics, like how do they compare? And you're like, they compare terribly. They're very poor.
But you know what? Up until just 100 years ago, they were doing really good. They were winning. They were more moral than basically general human society was.
Well, I wouldn't even say necessarily only only 100 years. Maybe probably more. I would put the credit towards our sort of modern, ethics to the Enlightenment period. You know, sort of like beginning in the 15th century and sort of like progressing from there, where we basically individuals started asking questions beyond regular religious dogma of saying, like, what makes human beings ethical? You know, it's like they already had these conversations in ancient Greeks, but guess what? Sort of like they were destroyed by the church. So religion destroyed those. We started again. And this wasn't sort of like these weren't religious movements. These were just basically individuals trying to, I mean, the Enlightenment were, these guys were basically had a big hard on for reason. This was their whole thing. They're like, reason and logic. These things are great. Can I construct methods of thinking and actions that are based on this really wonderful idea called rationality?
It's actually pretty fun to go through history and see how many times there was like a reason and rationality movement. Like during the Napoleonic Wars in Spain, one of the factions was like, they'd be like, for science and reason against the tyranny of the church.
Yeah, that stuff happened probably more than we think. It's just that,
the church always won.
The church would always win, yeah. I mean, even now, I mean, think about, we live in the age of science, and the church still wins in places like Texas or Turkey or all over the place. They're still winning. They still win in Ireland. They're still winning. They still have blasphemy laws. Ridiculous.
Indeed.
Anyways, that's not my point. But basically, the whole thing that I wanted to talk about is this notion that he has, that Christians have, that sort of human rights are a Christian idea. And let me tell you something. Okay, if you look at religions can exist in times where there is, sort of like peace and prosperity and even human rights. I mean, like, look, in the ancient world, You know, Islam was the shit. I mean, it was the Middle East was the most advanced place. It also had sort of like, you know, women had more rights and that kind of stuff. I mean, it was the most progressive place in the world. But it wasn't. It's not a permanent thing, you know. And you couldn't you couldn't go back and credit Islam or the Quran for that, saying, "Well, look, it was peaceful because of Islam." No, it was peaceful for other reasons. They happened to be Islamic at the time. Peaceful civilizations do spring up once in a while, but it's not contingent on their religious beliefs. In fact, it seems to not play a fucking role at all. Its role is usually, if you marginalize it, that's going to be the better option. Marginalize religion as much as you fucking can, and then you can have things like trade, and you can have peace, and you can have all kinds of things. But to credit those religions, you know, I think you're not taking the real, true historical perspective on this. You're failing to recognize the truth of history, which is basically saying that Christianity has not been peaceful. Like, this is a relatively new development in our history, and I think it's entirely not because of religion. It's entirely the efforts of individuals trying, philosophers, of you know, social scientists, these kinds of people. I mean, they're interested in how can we live better lives, and we have a lot of those answers now. We know how we can live better lives. Like, you know, that just go read your modern sort of code of ethics. Like, we have a pretty great code of ethics now. They're a lot better than the fucking Bible and the Quran, I would say, don't you?
Oh yeah.
I mean, these are like, there are rules out there to explain how people should live their lives that you know are fine and just. Humanism is a phenomenal philosophy. I highly recommend it. If you want to be a fan of anything, try being a fan of humans. I appreciate it. You know, I like it.
I would even say it's a more important thing. It's like, truth be told, this whole atheism thing is one of those in-between steps. It would be better if we could get to humanism and we all just worked on the advancement of the human race and our ability to all be happy and live better lives.
I would love if I could just, if the good atheist became something more than just basically our, how did you describe it again? We're very mocking of religion. That's our whole shtick. What is it again?
I'm not sure.
We're the grumpy ones.
Yeah.
We're the ones that basically scoff at religion.
Oh, yeah. We mock the hell out
we're
of
mockers.
It. Mm-hmm.
So I would love to stop mocking and you know, have discussions about humanism and so on and so forth. But the truth of the matter is that's not the dialogue that's happening right now. The dialogue is still on people trying to prove to us that there is a God.
And that he doesn't want people to have abortions, and that he doesn't think stem cells are any good.
And he just wants a lot of stuff from us, and a lot of stuff that just doesn't make any fucking sense. You know, you're telling me that if that I'm not allowed to use stem cells to try to cure people because you think that sort of a spirit inhabits a couple cells.
That's a design flaw. You'd think God and his infinite abilities would be able to make a, like a, you know, fetus 2.0 that doesn't have a soul there, so it ain't no big deal. It's like, you know, cut us some slack.
Well, look, if you want to talk designs, go out in nature and you can find tons of ways that the so-called perfect design of nature is just what you would expect from evolution. Not perfect at all. Not in the fucking slightest. Look at you. I mean, have you ever had to have wisdom teeth removed? Have you ever had a burst appendix? You know, just right there, these are two evolutionary sort of like tide overs that are, you know, dangerous. Like, people can get infections in their mouths from just something as stupid as, you know, wisdom teeth and then die. How cheap is that? Like, no one would sort of like say, like, what, praise that design. That's like, that's a giant problem. I mean, think about the people that have appendicitis every year. In the United States alone, it's 300,000 people that need to have this operation. You know, otherwise the complication is usually death. You know, if you allow that, you know, like the appendix will burst, it will leak all kinds of things in your fucking body, and it's very deadly, you know, but now it isn't. We just fucking remove that stuff. Oh, it hurts? Go to the place where they invented modern medicine, and they'll fix you right up, because you're an incomplete product of evolution. It's not fucking
progress.
You're a work in progress, exactly, because not everybody needs to have their wisdom teeth removed. About 20% of people don't even have wisdom teeth. I'm not going to say that they are evolved humans or better than me. They just don't have that unfortunate tendency to have fucking teeth grown out of their mouths where they're not supposed to be. And I mean, there's no clear indication. Go out in nature and you can find. The design, though impressive, is not perfect. And if you think from its design, saying like, well, it's so great that the creator must be perfect. If anything, the creator would be very flawed. You know, this is something you would expect from sort of a haphazard, I really was just fucking throwing shit together, trying to make a meal kind of thing, you know? It's like a mirepoix fucking of just bullshit. But it's still fucking amazing. It's really cool. Nature is cool. It's why we love studying it. And I think the best quote that I heard all day was that anyone who says that, well, science doesn't know everything, that's right, but they never claim to. And that's, if they knew everything, they'd stop doing science. They'd put the fucking things down and like, okay, well, we figured it all out. We're done. Science ain't done. It's still looking for answers. But all other religions, they consider themselves done. They're like, the Bible, it's done. Finished. Manual for living your life. Done. And you just, you're like, that's it? This is it. This thing that was written thousands of years ago is it. This is what I'm supposed to live by. I'm like, no. I say no to you. I'm like, I am not impressed. I'm not impressed. For an ancient book, you know, because there's not a lot of ancient books out there, you know, like the Library of Alexandria fucking burned to the ground, a million books. Like, that's a tragic event. Mm. We get stuck with the Bible then.
Well, I mean, and even if you want to just take a look at what religion as a general organization has done on an ethical level, if you want to say, oh, but they did all these great things. I'm like, they didn't do enough. They have not impressed me enough to be able to get this ethical standard where it's like, well, these guys are really amazing. No, they have tons of resources, tons and tons. Check out the Vatican. Rich as motherfuckers. What are they doing? They're doing stuff, but they ain't doing nearly as much as they could be.
And you have to ask yourself, like, let's pretend you are a modern Christian, and you see all these people that are fundamentalists and so on and so forth, that kill abortion doctors or do all kinds of things, and you're probably wondering to yourself, like, how could it go so horribly wrong, you know? Like, why is it just so, why can't they see it the way that you see it? And the reason that they don't see it the way you see it is that, look, the book itself is open to all kinds of interpretation. If you believe that it is infallible and you have to follow it, everybody makes some decisions about what parts are going to follow and what parts they're not going to follow. It is not a manual that you should live your life by, not only because it's terribly outdated and it suggests all kinds of things that we don't agree with anymore. You know, slavery being just a quick one, murdering, infanticide for, you know, being disobedient is another one. We just don't do this anymore. We obviously recognize that it's wrong. So if a person was to murder their own child because they did not believe in God, and they can find biblical passages that justify this, how do you justify it? How can you turn around and say they're not being Christians? How, you're not being a fucking Christian. You're not following the rules, man. You're following the rules you want to follow. So if you're wondering why they're acting the way that they're acting, they're probably wondering the fucking same thing about you. And in their mind, it's a lot clearer. They're like, we follow the law. And meanwhile, you just do what the fuck you want to do and just suddenly claim, oh, Jesus is all loving. No, he's not. He says that you have to listen to the Old Testament and follow every rule. And every rule is very explicit and clear about how it treats other human beings. And the answer is not well. Okay? Not fucking well. And you can turn around and suddenly say, well, he was a peace-loving guy. He's also the guy who brought us the concept of hell. No offense here, but this is not exactly the most peaceful and delightful idea to kind of press on. It sucks. It's balls. All right, with that, we're going to wrap things up. We're going to leave some materials anyways for Friday.
Hey, what are you talking about? I've got some awesome stuff.
All right.
I've got some really good stuff. You know what? Just a little preview, because actually I'm imagining that a lot of the people tuning in would know about this and are wondering why we aren't talking about it. On the Daily Dish, there's a really interesting discussion between all the readers there and the guy guest blogging for Andrew Sullivan about religion versus atheism versus anti-theism versus everything like that. It's very interesting. We're going to talk about that on Friday, and it's going to be so much better than your show.